Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's national anthem will be offered by award-winning Nashville recording artist Ricochet.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
3, 2, 1.
They do have some little quirks. I don't know that they own up to all of them.
Five wide, there's one outside. Good, good. Keep shoving, keep shoving. I don't know where you're at.
I think I'll go home and slam my head in the door. Repeated me.
Don't do that like I'm mad at last night, remember?
All right, well, let's try all this one more time. Mike Reed, are you with us now?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there we go. Okay. All right, something was going on with my electronic parts and pieces over here, my microphone, my headset. Everything sounded a little odd to start things off tonight, but we'll get it, we'll make it work, and everything is ready to go. So, as I was starting to say before we had some issues there, Daytona was, I won't say what everybody expected or wanted, definitely broadcast-wise. What did you think of what we saw coming out of Daytona? We'll get to the broadcast portion of it here in just a few minutes, but overall, what did you think of what we saw on track with Brad Keselowski taking his first win at Daytona? And overall, the quality of racing that we saw at the Super Speedway for the third time this season.
I wasn't upset with the quality of the racing in the Cup Series. I thought the Xfinity Series was really crazy. We had caution every 10 laps, so that was just nuts. I don't know. There's so much actually that frustrated me with the weekend. The positive of it is, you know, unfortunately a little hard to see through that. It's you and I both have a soapbox to climb on, and we'll do that in a little bit. But it just, I don't know. I don't know really what to say, Steven.
Let me ask you a question. In regards to the Xfinity race, we know that they have the rule in place that you can't lock bumpers, you can't push, because of the Xfinity cars being able to line up to a point where they could break out in that two-car tandem. In fact, we've seen it. We saw it in February, a couple cars, they locked bumpers for maybe a quarter of a lap, the second half of the front stretch or halfway down the back stretch entering turn three, but then they'd release. ever since they put that rule in place, we've seen more and more multiple big ones. Do you think it's time that NASCAR reevaluates that rule?
Well, and it's funny you say that, because also part of the reason they have that rule that you can't stay locked is because of how different those bumpers are between the Camaro and the Mustang and the Camry. It's not quite the same as it is in the cup level as far as the shape. They all have different characteristics. Part of the reason for them not letting people lock up bumpers is they claim you'd almost have more wrecks. You know what?
Well, I don't know if you can.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's almost the point now where, and we should probably do this in the Cup Series too, where going to a plate track, you have a specific bumper. Doesn't matter what make it is, and I don't care if Chevy or Ford is upset about it. If we want to have an actual good race, you know, where everyone can push and shove and do the restriction plate thing we all know and love, it's got to be an even field on all levels, not just make here, make here.
Yeah, and I think that when it comes down to it, and I know people were upset about the two-car tandem racing, which I still to this day, and I know it's been several years since we've been away from it, I don't get it. If you're going to have three-fourths of the field, if not 80% of the cars torn up at the end of the race because you are forcing guys to back off as they get to the corner or they can't lock those bumpers, but when you get to that point, you get up there and hit a guy and you almost get locked in, it's not that easy just to completely back away. We've heard drivers say it, that you can let completely out of the gas and tap the brake and you're still staying right almost attached to his bumper. You really kind of get onto the brake, then you're throwing the car out of balance and the guy behind you is nailing you. So you put a rule in place to avoid having that big one or having the two cars break out. And, I mean, I remember them also saying that the experience level in the Xfinity Series doesn't work towards that style of racing. Well, all right, you don't have it in the Cup Series. Why not put an aero package in to the Xfinity Series like you've got in the Cup Series that won't allow you to get to those bumpers? And, I mean, I think that kind of goes along with what you were saying in regards to make the changes to the bumpers, whether it's manufacturer differences or it's NASCAR saying, okay, we have a set style for the bumper. But you put a rule into place that ends up tearing up more cars and you get different quality of racing, which is not really that good. And you're having the teams that can't afford tearing up these cars, the ones that's tearing up the most.
Yeah. I don't know really what to say with the way Daytona went.
It's Daytona. We do this every single year. We run the 500, and all of a sudden we're like, okay, well, what kind of changes can we get for Talladega? Talladega has pretty much the same thing. And then we get back to Daytona, and all of a sudden it just becomes a full-blown train wreck to where the NTSB is wanting to investigate. And all of a sudden we're like, all right, well, we've got to make changes again. We've got to do this, and we've got to do that. But you've also got the situation that if you allow the drivers to lock those bumpers, you know that it's going to be the Cup guys that do it the best because they did it to complete success in the Cup Series. So there's all kinds of situations that come down to it. But at the end of the day, we're still seeing cars torn up, and, I mean, to a point where they're scrapping $100,000 race cars after that race because of the style of racing. So the soapbox, let's go ahead and get to the soapbox, because I know the end of the race, the Xfinity race, is in regards to your soapbox. So I'm going to go ahead and let you climb up on it, and we're going to talk a little bit about the end of the Xfinity race. Mike, soapbox is open for you.
Okay. I don't like when they do this, but throwing a caution out to make a finish at a restrictor plate track, I don't like it, but hey, I understand the safety concern. What happened last Saturday, in my mind, was not a safety concern, especially when you wait half a lap to throw it out. there was less than 100 yards to go before they had touched the start-finish line, and that was a heck of a finish. You all ruined and manufactured because you threw the caution out for no reason. There were cars spinning and wrecking for a good 30 seconds before you chose to throw that out. And how dare you get involved in that manner? If you're going to throw a caution out, throw it when cars are wrecking and spinning. You do it in the Cup Series. You do it in the Truck Series. You should have done it in the Xfinity Series. I don't understand that move. And you can't tell me it was because of a safety concern, because if you were that concerned with safety, you'd have done it 30 seconds sooner. That's dropping the ball, and that's messing with something you shouldn't mess with. Back to you, Steven.
Mike is fired up, and I don't blame him, because a lot of people were when it came right down to it. When the end of the Xfinity Series, when the checkered flag flew, social media, I thought, was going to blow up. I thought the servers for Twitter and Facebook were just going to literally explode, and we're going to see a mushroom cloud over Southern California. Because really, when it came down to it, you're exactly right. You cannot wait that long and not all of a sudden say, okay, well, we've got to throw the caution flag now. They were already past the final scoring loop on the front stretch prior to the start-finish line when that caution flag flew.
I'll throw this at you, because the Xfinity Series has a chase also. The guy who they decided won it was a Cup regular. They took a chase spot away from Justin Allgaier.
You're right. That's a good point, and that's one that I had not really thought about. And I think it was probably Allgaier's best chance to lock himself into that chase. But here's one other thing. And somebody and I completely lost my thought. I took a drink and lost my thought. I'll get back to it. But one of the other things that I wanted to point out is that when it comes down to it, and NASCAR said they were trying to wait as long as possible, but then they changed their mind and say, okay, well, it's a safety issue. Let's look back earlier in the race. And you may be able to say, okay, well, it was just a single car incident. But when Daniel Suarez spun out and he hit the inside wall on the backstretch, looking back at the video, and there's one camera angle that's coming off of Suarez's car, and as he's sliding, he has not even impacted the inside wall, and the caution lights on the backstretch are flashing. Single car spinning down to the inside, out of the way of any other cars, no one else was involved, and you throw the caution flag before he even impacts the wall. But yet on the final lap, you're trying to tell me that all of a sudden it's a safety issue, and we wanted to give them the opportunity to try and race back, but we want to put the caution out so that we can get safety crews to the drivers. And now I understand the safety aspect of this, because you have to have the racetrack under yellow. You have to have it under a controlled situation before those safety trucks can roll. I understand that. Don't get me wrong of saying that I don't care about safety, because when it comes right down to it, safety is our number one aspect for these drivers. But you put that situation in hand, and if you really wanted to call out safety, that these safety trucks would have been rolling to that crash scene before those cars were coming off of turn four. Now, when you originally put this rule in place, it was all in regards, when the caution came out, there was no racing back. You couldn't race back when they put that caution flag out, because like you had mentioned, it was so close to the start-finish line when that came out that there was no real racing back. It was basically they lift out of the throttle and they're crossing the start-finish line. Now, I can also understand some of the arguments of saying, okay, well, they had to put it out by then, because if they would have waited any longer, then you're almost coming back around to the accident scene.
No.
BS. Because after you cross that start-finish line, these guys are lifting out of the throttle, rolling back into turn one. Spotters are already telling them, before they even came off of turn four, as they're racing back to the line, there's a crash on the backstretch, crash behind you. So when they cross that start-finish line, they know where that crash is at. If NASCAR wants to be consistent, and they lost a lot of consistency and a lot of credibility on Friday night with that race. And one of the things that I saw somebody post on social media, and it caught me to a point, I'm like, you know what, you're absolutely right.
NASCAR owes Mark Martin an apology. Now, we go back to that, and you remember that race all too well with Kevin Harvick. How quickly they threw that caution flag when Mark Martin lost that Daytona 500. It was on the front stretch, and it was in the place where they threw the yellow, and it was behind the leaders. Three-fourths of the field was involved in that accident, and like you mentioned, they were less than a quarter mile away from the start-finish line. What is the caution flag going to do at that point in time? Other than screw the guy out of second place, a chance to win. And that is exactly what they did. They waited to a point where there was nothing that was going to come out of that other than taking the opportunity away to win for the guy in second place, and that was Justin Allgaier. So this whole situation, NASCAR has to resolve it. And I know they mentioned it in the Sprint Cup drivers meeting in regards of how they were going to handle cautions. And yes, Ryan Newman
lit them up. And you know what? Hats off to him. I know Smoke said a couple weeks ago he's one of the only – or him and Jeff were the last two people with a pair, you know, as drivers go. But Ryan Newman called them out, and that was awesome to me.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find his exact quote. I had it earlier. Pointed out in the driver's meeting.
It basically was saying y'all need to do a better job than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in basic simple terms, you're absolutely right. And what he said, if you could err towards the side of safety with respect to the overtime line, throwing the caution instead of racing back to the line. And that's the other thing, is where that accident happened was right there at that caution line, or the line that's going to say, okay, the race is over at this point. And see, and that's the other thing. Had they thrown that caution immediately, that line decides the end of the race. And who was leading at that point in time? They were single file coming across that line on the backstretch. Justin Allgaier was in the lead. They didn't go side by side until they got to turn three. So, and that's another thing. If you put that line out there and you say you're going to use that to decide the end of the race after the white flag comes out, here's a perfect opportunity to use it and show us how it's used. Because right there, that caution comes out. They put the yellow out in the same amount of time they did for Daniel Suarez. Justin Allgaier is the winner, and it's determined on that line on the backstretch, which we have not used since they put it into place. Whether that is something they didn't want to do, I don't know. And I mean, I feel bad for the Xfinity Series because the people up there in the booth, they're not the Cup guys. I mean, the director of the Xfinity Series, Wayne Auten, did a great job with the Truck Series, and he's done a great job of developing the Xfinity Series since he took over. But to have to make that call in a split second, I do feel a little bit for them. But if you want to be the official, you put your neck out there. You hang it out on the line. You make the decision and say, all right, we stand by it. They have wavered on why they waited. Nobody has been given a real decision. They were like, okay, well, we wanted to see if the scene was going to be clear enough and everybody could drive away. We also wanted to give them the opportunity to race back. No, that's the other thing. You say you don't want them to race back because they're a crash, put the yellow out. No questions. Somebody spins, put it out. We've seen guys brush up against the wall, leave no debris, and the caution comes out faster than you can say yellow. But yet at Daytona, they let a situation fly and they've lost credibility. And you're right when it came to Ryan Newman. When Richard Buck, Cup Series director, said, we always err on the side of safety, that's our top priority. And then Newman said, try to do a better job of it. Or try to do a better job than you did last night.
Pretty much. And I'll tell you what, Darrell Wallace Jr., I don't know if you saw this, he got fined $15,000 for a tweet that he basically...
I was going to bring that up here at the bottom of the hour.
Oh.
But no, you're right, and I'm glad you brought it up because I may have forgotten about it because we've got so much going on. But go ahead with what you were saying, $15,000 for that tweet.
What he said is, got the Muppets up there officiating tonight, never know how to react under pressure. What a joke. And you know what? I don't blame him. NASCAR does not like whenever you slam them, but when they have it messed up so badly in my book, you can't not call them out on it.
Right. And they deserve to be called out on it. And it's very unfortunate that you have a driver that says exactly what the fan base was thinking. Now, I'll give Bubba credit because to call the officiating crew a bunch of Muppets, that's tops in my book. I mean, that's two thumbs up from me. It's exactly what it is. It's people up there that have no clue of what the heck they're doing. And I don't like to say that because these are people that have been in NASCAR for a very long time. They understand the rules better than the fans. But at the same point in time, you're making mistakes and you can't stand behind your decision. Step up and say, all right, well, we made a mistake. We should have put the caution out there on the backstretch. Because anything less than that is just trying to fool the fan base, and the fans are smarter than that. So, well, that was one soapbox. And I know we kind of carried on a little bit with that, but that is what, I mean, you look at blogs and forums, these things are carrying on with what people are thinking about NASCAR and their officiating crew. And a lot of them are like, thank goodness we only have one restrictor plate track left because I don't think we could deal with it anymore. But when we go to the second half of the weekend, and we know NBC took over the broadcast this past week, fans were clamoring for a change from Darrell Waltrip and the Fox crew. They were like, we can't wait for NBC. And you get a 3.5-hour broadcast done with, and all of a sudden everybody is like, please, for the love of God, bring Fox back, because that was the worst thing I've ever seen. No, it wasn't the worst thing you've ever seen. And, in fact, when you start talking about it and you look at the actual stats, and unfortunately race fans don't tend to like stats when they are up on their own personal soapbox and just blowing hot air at people, they don't like the numbers. But when you come right down to it and you look at Daytona and you compare the two races between Fox and NBC at Daytona, the Daytona 500, as it should, being the Super Bowl of motorsports, had more commercials. And when I say more commercials, I'm talking 20 to 30 more commercials just during the race broadcast. And that's only an additional 100 laps. That's not a long period of time. Or not even 100 laps, no. 40 laps, 160 to 200. So it's not like you've got an abundance of time. Total number of commercials that were run during the Coke Zero 400 was 124. Okay. 156 is what was run during the Daytona 500, as well it should be. A lot of advertisers, a lot of money put into the Daytona 500. The Coke Zero 400 from 1 year ago had 96 total commercials. Now, let me put this out to you. Anybody that is listening this, turn up your ears. If you've got a hearing aid, crank that volume up. Listen to what I'm about to say. As somebody that deals with commercials on a daily basis, the NBC broadcast for the 2016 Coke Zero 400 had five fewer sponsors, five fewer advertisers for that race. And you say, okay, well, how can you have more commercials if you have fewer sponsors? That's exactly why. Because they have the same amount of money that they are spending for this race as compared to last year, but yet they have to make that same amount of money back. So what has to happen if you've got five fewer sponsors? You have to bump up the commercial load for the people that are paying the money, because you can't just say, hey, we ran 30-second spots 1 year ago, and you paid $1 million for that. Well, you're going to pay $1.5 million this year and still only get 30 spots. Guess what happens to that sponsor? They're like, no way. We're not paying that money. We're leaving. So you have one fewer advertiser. The fewer advertisers that you start to have in that race broadcast, the more commercials that you have to run to make up that money. So you want to blame somebody for having more commercials during that race? You blame the advertisers. But remember, the moment that you start doing that, think back what happened to Napa when you started blowing up their Facebook page because of what happened with Michael Waltrip Racing. They left. You start criticizing these advertisers because of how much they have to put their commercial on, they are paying for that race to be seen by you. So if you don't want to miss it, you better pipe down. And if you don't pipe down about the commercials that are being run, you're going to lose it altogether. You're going to lose the broadcast. And I can hear people saying, well, what about Fox? They didn't run nearly as many commercials. Let me give you a number. People are trying to say that the NBC broadcast was 49% commercials, 49.4 to like 51.6 or 50.6. Wrong. Do the math yourself. Just because you see it on a meme or somebody else's bogus blog, if it's not on NBC Sports, Fox Sports, NASCAR.com, or somebody that has legitimacy to that, you better take it with a grain of salt. And that's what's happening, because it was 32% commercial time that was run during the Coke Zero 400. Fox's average commercial for their first half of the season was 34% per race. So 34% of each race during the Fox broadcast was a commercial. One third. And if you can't accept that while you're watching a race, then you need to just pipe down or not watch it altogether. And I'm not one to say you need to stop watching a race, because if the fans aren't watching, there's no point in anybody paying for the broadcast and NASCAR goes away. But you have to take with what you are getting. And remember that we had fewer advertisers, so they had to recoup that money. And a lot of that had to do with people upset about the advertisers that were part of this broadcast 1 year ago. So if you're upset about it now, just think what happens 1 year from now when NBC takes over the Coke Zero 400 and you do actually get to that 49% of commercials. You think you were livid this year? Well, just look back on what you did, because it's the fan base upset with the advertisers about wanting to make that money. It's those commercials that are putting that show on the air. And I'm not talking pre-race show. I'm not talking rain delay. I'm not talking post-race coverage. I'm talking green to checkered. That's it. If you can't accept what's on there, turn the radio on. But you're going to find a lot more commercials on the radio as you are compared to the NBC broadcast. Take it with what it is, because somebody has to pay that bill for you to be able to watch it. Soapbox clear.
Well, and I will say this. I was very happy to see, you know, NBC back, because they do the one thing I love that they do is when there's a caution, they'll actually break commercial and show you what happened. They won't make you wait till everything's already done and over. I love that they do that. I hate that Fox doesn't. But I think what you just said, it made the commercials seem like they were so much longer or so much more frequent, because we were seeing the same ones over and over again. And I don't remember I don't remember what companies you're referring to as far as people had a problem with last year. You kind of lost me with that one, but that's the only thing. I was one of those people that was like, there seems to be commercials every 20 laps. What the heck is going on here, guys? But they also do that race view where actually the race that they're showing is in a bigger picture than the one they give you for the commercial, which is great. Because I was one of those people that was like, oh my God, what is with the commercial?
Well, and I was too, because it was a frequency issue. Seemed like it was, all right, you have you get three or four laps of green flag racing, and then you get a commercial set. But because of the frequency that they had to run them, they were running them in shorter sets. So your actual commercial breaks were shorter than what they normally are. Typically, you get anywhere between a 3 to 4 minute stop set for commercials. What they were giving you was a minute and a half to 2 minutes. So, yes, you were seeing 3 to 4 laps of commercial or a race, and then they'd have to go to a commercial break, but their breaks were shorter. But, and that goes back to the whole thing of them having fewer sponsors, so they have to get more in. They have to play it. They have to play the KFC commercial 100 times, because they have to get them in basically in every commercial break to recoup that money. And now what it comes down to is, there, like I said, there were 51 sponsor advertisers this year. Last year there were, I think I said 55, there were 56 because there were five advertisers fewer. And this is, like I mentioned, for green to checkered, for the race. Well, under those contracts, the same advertisers from last year were supposed to be there this year. But there were five of them that pulled their broadcast or pulled their spot loads. They did a buyout, basically. They didn't want to be a part of it this year. But everybody had a contract for this year to return. And now I couldn't tell you who those five were. All I know is it was the same advertisers. And I saw a list the other day, and I just can't remember what they were, and I should have printed this out. Shame on me for not being 100% prepared. But they were the same advertisers from 1 year ago. So you've got to remember that being upset about the commercials doesn't do you any good, because you want to see this in HD. You want to see it from this camera angle, from that camera angle. Well, to do that, they have to be able to pay for it. They also, that money, the TV rights and the broadcast rights are what make this sport go. It's what pays for NASCAR. What's the money that goes into the points fund? You've got all this money being spread around. You don't have it. You don't have the race. Somebody's got to pay for it. Nothing is free anymore, and the way that you had it back in the 80s and 90s on ESPN or on Speed or whatever, wherever you were having it, it's a different time and it's a different cost. It has to be recouped. Yes, you know that the commercials are going to be able to be what does that, but if you don't accept that they're there, there are so many ways to watch a race now. I watched it the other night. I had it on a stream. I had it on my app on my phone, and I had the radio broadcast. I didn't miss one single lap of action. You figure out how to watch the race nowadays, and you're not going to miss anything. Take a few minutes to investigate and look into how you can actually watch the race, because it's a different day and age, and you have to be able to use the technology that's given to you. All right. We move on now because we're actually into our second half of the hour, and we've still actually got to get to Kentucky because this race is going to be something that is a sight to behold. If you can watch this race and sit down and enjoy it and watch it from all angles, you're going to enjoy this. I think we're going to see something special at Kentucky this weekend with the new racetrack. We do have summer-like temperatures. We're going to be in the mid-80s. Yes, it's going to be at dusk, evening time. No chance of rain. There is pretty much, there's a few clouds. There's like a 10% chance of rain Saturday night, but that's only because it's summertime in Kentucky and you can't say zero. But with the new track, the low downforce aero package, excuse me, I have the hiccups, and everything that's going to go on down there, excuse me, my son just walked up and was trying to talk to me, so getting all kinds of things going on here. But anyways, Kentucky is going to be as much of a wild card as Talladega will be. And we'll get to a few more of that here in a minute. But, Mike, you remember last week we talked about the title sponsor for the Cup Series, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's been some updates to this. Now, instead of just fall, we are actually expected to have an announcement in probably September, mid to late September or the first week of October. Steve Phelps from NASCAR noted current agreements with Xfinity and Camping World were made at the same time. So they expect to have the Cup Series deal done through that same time. Now, a couple dates here. Xfinity's sponsorship runs through 2024, and Camping World is up through 2022. And one of the other things that Steve Phelps brought up, there might be more than one sponsor. He said this in an interview on SiriusXM. And this caught my ear when I heard this, because it was asked, remember, about Brian France, about possibly having more than one sponsor, and he said no? Well, according to Steve Phelps, who is the director of communications and handling more of this than Brian France is, he said there may be more than one. He said, don't be surprised to see a sponsor that is currently involved in NASCAR and one that is new to the sport. So that makes you kind of perk your ears up and go, huh? You want to talk about things that make you go, huh? That's it. How do you call the Cup Series? I think it's just going to be the NASCAR Cup Series if you have more than one advertising.
Yeah, say, I don't know how you call something two names. That just sounds stupid to me, unless it is a company that has a product under the company. I don't understand how you can do that at all. That just sounds confusing.
It does sound weird, and I've been thinking about this since I heard this earlier on Monday. You start to think about, okay, and like you said, it's going to be one current sponsor that's possible and one that's new to the sport. That's a whole lot. And remember, we were talking Microsoft last week. Well, Microsoft is a lot of independent with teams and stuff, a little bit with NASCAR. Do you consider them new to the sport or a current NASCAR sponsor? I don't know. But with what they are talking, they said they are down to 8 possible sponsors. And if you're talking 2 of them combining, I can't fathom. And, I mean, we spent time talking last week about what it could possibly be. There is nothing in my mind right at this moment of how we can possibly put what might be titling this this series next year.
No, and you know what? You ever since you brought up that Windows thing, I suddenly noticed a lot more Windows commercials or them promoting Windows products or mentioning them in the middle of an interview or a news thing.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed that as well, and you're starting to see that imaging around in more places. So is that something that's getting ready to bump up? I don't know, but I'm telling you what, I'm looking forward to September and October because this is going to be an announcement. I can't wait to hear. I mean, it's always fun to hear a new title sponsor and then to see the imaging of how they're going to put all this together and what kind of things it's going to do to benefit the sport and the fans in general. Because it's, remember, when it comes right down to it, it's about me, 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 me. What is it going to do for me at the racetrack as a fan? But so that's supposed to come up in September or October. A little Martin Truex Jr. news. For anyone that was worried about Martin Truex Jr.'s future at Furniture Row, well, according to general manager Joe Garrone, everything will be just fine. And even though they're looking for additional advertisers, they are also looking to put in place for 2017 a second team. So Martin Truex may finally find his drafting partner at Daytona and Talladega and a teammate starting in 2017. He said, for us, we're going to be together. He said, it's just the way that it is. And right now, he said, he's got a good thing going on with their team as far as Martin Truex. And as far as the company for Furniture Row, he said, he's got a lot of investors that are very interested in bumping up advertising and sponsorship to move into a second car and putting another driver. Now, there is a name that has popped up from Eric Jones is the leading candidate to jump in that second car starting in 2017. We've discussed this before. Where does Eric Jones go? They have a full house over at Joe Gibbs Racing. So we've seen the progress that Furniture Row has made. They're a contender. They're winning races. They're a championship contender. They put a second car together that only makes that team better. And we know the talent that Eric Jones has. That could be a very potent tandem.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, but what always makes me nervous is if you're going to start a brand new team with a rookie. It seems like that'd be harder to do than if, you know, JGR was to give them Matt Kenseth or Carl Edwards. You know, we were talking not too long ago about Eric Jones taking one of their spots because I think it was Denny Hamlin and Matt Kenseth both have a contract that's up at the end of the year. But I don't know. Eric Jones would be a good pick just because he's in the Toyotas and he's been with JGR. He knows how all that goes on. Does that mean that they're not going to have as much of a technical alliance with JGR or not? Because right now they do. If JGR is going to give them his, you know, lead rookie, I don't know. I don't know how that.
I think when it comes to it, I think it's going to pretty much probably stay like that, because I think what Furniture Row and JGR have together is a major benefit for the overall Toyota organization. Because when you get the programs and the technology out of Joe Gibbs Racing, and there's no question that JGR is leading the way in development for Toyota. They're leading the way, and I think a lot of development for NASCAR overall. So you get the technology that comes out of JGR. You get the cars that are built right out of that stable. And I really look at this as Furniture Row is the name on the team, and you've got the employees from Joe Gibbs Racing that now work for Furniture Row. You've got the technology. You've got the access to the information, because they share information just as if they're teammates working out of the same building. So you put that additional car in there, and I think really, in all honesty, you've got two teams working as one. Kind of like that whole theory that, or that what Hendrick Motorsports always says, we're four cars working as one team. Well, I think you've got the same thing with JGR. And you've got the talent, you've got the experience that is actually in the Joe Gibbs Racing stable. You've got Martin Truex, who's kind of in that middle. He's not the young gun, but he's not that long-term veteran. But you've got a guy that knows how to win races, and he knows how to work with both the young and old. I think Erik Jones is not your typical rookie. We've seen Erik Jones do things with these cars that, well, you shouldn't be able to do. Erik Jones is one of those that I would definitely put in the category of no fear. That kid has no fear. And he will race with the biggest names in the sport, and I think when he gets to the Cup Series, whether he's in a first-time car at Furniture Row or he takes over one of the top cars at Joe Gibbs Racing or another team, he's going to be, and I would expect to be almost an instant success. I would put him in the same category of where we saw Kyle Larson and even Chase Elliott. And to be completely blunt, I think Erik Jones is better than Chase Elliott.
Whoa. Those are big words, man.
I do. Chase is a supreme talent. There is no question about that. But I think when it comes down to situational evaluation, putting himself in a place where he knows he can win from, because we've seen Chase put himself in situations that all of a sudden, boom, you're like, oh, well, that was just bad luck. Was it? Or was it a bad decision to put yourself in that position? We've seen Erik Jones literally put himself in a spot and then all of a sudden make a move, and the next thing you know, there's cars wrecking right where he would have been. I think Erik Jones has better situational awareness. And I think that that's what will make him a championship contender from the get-go. And that's why I say that he's just a little bit above the talent of Chase Elliott. Now, Elliott's going to have the experience because of having jumped right into the 24 car, running up front. But you put those two together, what will Erik Jones be able to do in a newer car compared to a developed championship team that Chase Elliott got into? That's going to be one of those things that we watch when Jones gets into that car full time. Because if he gets into it and he immediately takes it to the front, then there's no question in my mind that he has a little more talent than Elliott does. Because it takes more talent to put a car up front that is not a championship contending car than it does to put one that has been in that championship situation. Now, I'm not saying by a long shot, and I'm not saying, okay, Chase Elliott is halfway up the summit to Mount Everest and Erik Jones is already sitting on the top getting his picture taken. No. It's only by maybe a position or two, but it's just enough to be able to see the difference. And Erik Jones should be able to get into a car in the Sprint Cup Series and immediately contend. Thoughts on that?
No, actually, what I was thinking about just now, next year, you have to help me out with the name because I don't remember what it's called. Shame on me. But 21 team has a hard time making a 40-car field if we have a rain out because of the, what is that called?
The charter system.
Thank you, charter. They're still not they don't have a charter next year, right? Because I thought I heard you had to be there for 4 or 5 years in order to have a charter.
That's the way it's supposed to. And a lot of people think that NASCAR has already made the one adjustment to the charter system for the Chase, that in 2017, there's probably going to be another adjustment to it as well. And I would expect that basically comes to Wood Brothers rule. So there's no guarantee that it's going to happen. And like you mentioned, you have to be full-time for 5 years to have been able to garner a charter. But we'll see where that goes definitely next year.
Well, I was just thinking, for Terrell getting a second team, they're only going to have a charter for one of those teams, but that now makes it hard for a team like Brothers to make that in.
That's true. That's definitely an addition, but at the same point in time, you have to look, like looking this week at the starting lineup, or not the lineup, the entry list for this week at Kentucky. You have teams like Cole Witt, Ty Dillon, Reed Sorensen in the Premium Motorsports 55, Landon Castle's locked in, Jeffrey Earnhardt in the 32 for Go Fast Racing. These are some of those teams that he would have to compete with. And now when you start to look at talent-wise, now this week we have 40 cars that are on the entry list, pretty much just like we have all season long. Would that still be the same next year? Hard to tell. But I think that when you look at that and you put that charter system into play, you've got the one, as you mentioned, and the second car would not be locked in. It would be a development type of thing. But I think this is the thing that teams were concerned of, and fans were as well, and rightfully so, when they started to talk about the charter system, because you were going to have didn't have the opportunity for teams to expand or new owners to come in and develop. You couldn't be that start and park because you weren't going to be able to develop that charter system. You weren't going to be able to come in and, I'm going to run this race because of the money that's involved in it, start and park, and then wait a couple weeks. I'm not going to risk it at Talladega or maybe Bristol and have a torn up car, but maybe run at Atlanta in California and save a little bit of money and slowly build up, kind of like Tommy Baldwin did. Tommy Baldwin is the perfect example of start and parks developing into a full-time team. Now, are they a contender? No, of course not. But they are to a point where the system worked for them. But the charter system makes that kind of difficult, and we talked about that after the charter system was introduced. How is this going to make teams be able to develop? And that's exactly what Joe Garrone and Furniture Row Racing is going to have to contend with in putting the second car in next year. How it's going to affect the 21 next year as well. I mean, they've got one full-time season under their belts. And I think they're to a point, as long as we've got the 40-41 cars, they're not going to have a problem. If we have 45 or 46 cars show up to a race to try to qualify, then it could be a little sketchy at times. But I think the 21 is, they've proven this year that they can run up front. They can be in a position to make the chase. And in all honesty, I think the charter system might be adjusted to a team that if they are without a charter and they make the chase, that kind of guarantees them the charter. I would almost think that would be something that NASCAR has to look at. So a couple minutes left. Real quick, one thing in regards to Kentucky this week. We've got a new tire. Goodyear has developed a brand new tire that's going to be running this weekend. It's the first time that this compound has been run. It's going to be a little bit bigger of a multi-zone tread on the right side compared to what they ran at Michigan. The Michigan tire is pretty much the most comparable, but Goodyear says they are concerned about the heat and the new surface and possible blistering. So we're running a harder compound tire and a little bit bigger one. So as far as right sides, it is an inner liner, and it should be, they're looking 12 to 25 pounds greater for the inflation air pressure for the inner liner and the outside tire. So we'll see something different. We'll probably see a lot of teams wondering what happened to their race cars with this tire that's going to be on here, since it's not something they've run and on a new surface. So if you're watching qualifying, you're doing all your stuff for your fantasy picks, practice, qualifying is going to be vital to watch this week before you make your picks, because, well, I think you're going to see some teams that are comers and goers very quickly with the setups on their cars this week.
Yeah, you throw what you know out of the book, because we've got a new surface, a new tire. The last 5 years have all been Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and Matt Kenseth. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see either three of those in the winner's circle this weekend.
See, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. I'm like, okay, well, where do we stand when it comes to our fantasy picks? And I think we'll go ahead and get into that because, well, I mean, I know that you've been waiting all week to say, I won. You had the stronger pick from last week. I can't even remember who I had.
Trevor Bayne.
Yes, you had Trevor Bayne. And surprisingly enough, to come home with a third-place finish, I would say that was quite impressive for the Roush Fenway driver.
Well, not even that, not just that. I mean, that's definitely impressive for that one driver. But as a whole, all three Roush teams finished in the top 10. Now, granted, yeah, there was some carnage involved. But still, that's something that team hasn't been able to say they've done in quite a while. So I'm loving what I'm seeing out of Roush this year.
Yeah, and I mean, when you really kind of look at it, can they carry that momentum over? Because, yes, they've had some good runs at the restrictor plate tracks. They've been up and down. We've seen more consistency out of Trevor Bayne getting inside of the top 15 each week. Greg Biffle still has the up and down weeks. So, really, when you look at it, is where are they going to be going moving forward? So, that was definitely a good run. I had Ryan Blaney to win last week at Daytona. And having a good run going and unfortunately getting involved close, real quick. He was ridiculously close to the big one. In fact, he got a little bit of a dent in his front nose as he got it locked up and got into the back of Danica Patrick. They're going through the big one. But when Tony spun, clipped his right front and right rear and put a little damage on that for the green-white checkered, which he couldn't really do much with. So, your thoughts?
I don't know really what thought I could have. It's just as far as what, Daytona or Kentucky?
Well, final thoughts on Daytona, and we'll get into our Kentucky picks.
And I think we've said everything we needed to say about Daytona. And the only other thing I'll complain about is this restart. Yeah, you know what?
Put it in.
Screw it. The restart. They drive me nuts. I hate the way they are right now, but I think the fact that you can signal to the car behind you when to go should be illegal, because that's an unfair advantage that you're giving somebody else that the rest of the field can't have, or the guy, people to the outside of you can't have. You're supposed to control the restart. Now both of you are controlling the restart. I hate it. There are two people that are pretty much primarily use it. I'm not saying they are the only ones, but majority of the time, that's who I see doing it. And I hate it. I think it's stupid. And I really just want the flag man to start the races again.
Yeah, I saw that and I kind of thought about that. But at the same point in time, I've seen Jeff Gordon do that in the past. Jimmy Johnson's done that. Dale Jr. does it. We've seen Carl Edwards do it. But you're right, it does seem to relate to two specific drivers when it comes right down to it, but it only seems to happen at Daytona and Talladega, because in all honesty, you want that guy right with you on the restart. Now, Keselowski's not going to tell Joey Logano when to go in the restart zone this week at Kentucky, because he wants to get out as far as he can on that restart. So I think when it comes down to just those four races, I'm not that over the top about it. I see where you're going with it. Because it does give that advantage, but that's why they're teammates. And it only works if you have a teammate lined up directly behind you. And with the way some things work, you can't always make that situation go. And he's not going to give a quick share to a Toyota guy that's right directly behind him and say, hey, look, here, we're going to jump out here. No, It's just going to work if he's got Logano behind him. So I don't think it's a rule that should be abolished because it takes time to get that to work out. So, but I see what you're saying, and I do kind of wish that the flagmen would just put the rag in the air and say, hey, let's go.
So anyway, back to our fantasy. You did have the strong pick from this past week in Daytona. That means you lead the way heading into fantasy for Kentucky.
Well, since everything is an audible, the hard part going into this weekend is you don't really know who to pick because you don't know who's going to do anything with this track. Just there are so many unknowns. But since going by that, I'm going to go with Casey Kane.
Interesting that you say that because as I'm looking down my numbers, that was the car that I was looking at. But at the same point in time, hear that? Yeah, that would be all my numbers. I just threw it away because as we go to a track that has a brand new surface on it, new banking, brand new tire, practice is going to be pivotal. And we practice in the daytime and we race at night. So that's another one of those scenarios that's going to be thrown into the bank. We don't typically see Chevrolet run well at Kentucky. That being said, I'm going with a Chevy. And as much as I hate to do this, Jimmy Johnson will take the checkered flag at Kentucky this weekend. And I know my wife's not looking too thrilled with that because for the first time in like 7 years, I'll be sitting in the grandstands this Saturday night to watch a race. But Jimmy Johnson looks, I would say, is one that can overcome all those obstacles. He's got the benefactor of Chad Knaus, Mr. Robot, who can calculate things at the speed of light and make those changes as necessary. So we've seen Jimmy up and down recently this season. He does have 3 wins on the season, but would not be surprised to see the 48 standing in victory lane holding the horse head at the end of that race late Saturday night. One quick thing before we get out of here, Ryan Newman says he is still in contract talks with RCR. Not sure where he's going to go. As we know, Ty Dillon is waiting in the wings, his 3rd year in the Xfinity Series, and he looks to be one of those favorites. You had a thought?
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think the 48 team has so much the track or Kentucky to battle with themselves. They just have not been where they normally are.
No, that's absolutely right. Something just seems off about it. But I could see this weekend being something that they get turned around. You know, as well as the Fords have been running too, we could see them jump up as well. Mike, real quick thoughts, final thoughts, breakdown as we get ready to get out of here in about 30 seconds.
I'm just looking forward to a complete question mark, man. And we'll have a lot to talk about. I'm feeling it on next week.
Let's hope that NBC can limit their commercials because I don't think I can take the explosion of the fan base this another week in a row. So a great weekend to kick off last week at Daytona. We should have another one this week as well. So, Mike, have a great night. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.